right. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. So I was thinking, I actually didn't write out like a full blown intro for you because I just know you in so many different facets.
Okay.
But I think the most interesting thing, and I'm sure people ask you about this all the time, is the fact that you were in public education for 20 years?
21.
21 years before you made the switch. And so I feel like the most relatable thing that I've thought about when it comes to you is that you followed an instinct. Like you followed something, and I don't know if it was something that just like hit you one day or if it was a slow burn. So I want to talk obviously all about your business, but I wanted to introduce everyone to Jason Sizemore, my friend, who is the founder and owner of Butterhead Kitchen. Correct me if I'm saying anything wrong.
Correct.
So let's just start from there. What made you take that leap of faith and make the switch?
I think it was a slow burn. I think I loved education. I loved people. I loved helping kids and then helping the staff in schools. But at the same time, I feel like I had a creative side that I was losing the more and more that the school demands weren't a creative nature. And just feeling burnout, honestly, it's a lot. And I was giving it my all. Mm-hmm. And I had a voice kind of in my head like, what if I give this much to something else? Mm. And I've given a couple of decades to this. And I always loved entertaining. I loved cooking. I loved food. I loved decorating. And so I played with like wedding planning, like thing, other ideas that just didn't play out. And I didn't really feel the passion. And I feel like the leap was kind of cheesy. William and I went to Paris and London. Mm. I think my second year of my principal job in the summer and loved every minute of it. Came home and was just like so post-vacation depressed. And truly I can picture sitting on the couch out of nowhere. I was like, what if I just taught cooking classes? Like it just came out of nowhere. Mm. And I started writing all these menus in my phone, really no plan. And then that fall, I decided to do a Thanksgiving themed one in our house. And not, this was not like, I'm going to do this to start a career, but as an outlet. And yes, that was the spark.
Nice.
For sure.
So it literally just hit you.
It did.
So can you describe for people who don't know what Butterhead Kitchen is all about and what you do?
Sure. So we do a few things, but the main thing is I call it like an interactive dinner party cooking class, almost like a cooking show, but you get to speak to the cook, eat the food. So mm-hmm. about 2 hours, I cook everything live. You learn all the recipes, of course, you eat everything, and you take home the recipe book. But we also do catering products that we sell locally. We have our own space where we do events, but go in people's homes, their businesses, and kind of like wide open. Like people come to me with an idea. As long as it's vegan baseline, we pretty much say yes and figure it out.
Yeah, it's all 100% vegan. And your caprese salad changed my life. Like your mozzarella cheese, how you make it, I don't even understand. But it's honestly, I'll never forget one like late night coming over and you just like whipped up this salad. It was amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, so how long have you been vegan?
In May, 14 years.
Okay. And what prompted that switch for you?
So I was all over the place with eating, but vegetarian before vegan. Started giving up some meat in college, but then pretty much full vegetarian for animal purpose, animal welfare. And then vegan leap was I lost my dad very suddenly to a heart condition that my grandfather also died from young. And we thought my dad was on the right track. Super healthy, all kinds of great choices, but didn't obviously... That didn't work out. So like through research, like there's so much research that eating vegan or plant-based or just basically cutting out animal products is helpful for a lot of different health things, but especially heart issues and especially valve issues, which is what I have. So it was truly like a health choice to give up also dairy and eggs.
Wow. And was William vegan before that? William is Jason's husband.
He wasn't, and that definitely helped.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty vegetarian with me, and then within a month, we were both vegan.
Yeah.
So definitely a helpful
partnership. I can imagine, because if someone was, like, you know, eating something in front of me that smelled good, that would be rough.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that you kind of noticed right away when you made the full switch?
Just feeling lighter. Mm. Not ever feeling stuffed. Like, feeling full and satisfied, but not the heavy feeling I used to get.
Right.
Better skin. I mean, my heart, I go to Penn Medicine. It's degenerative, but my valve is not degenerating. It's staying the way it is, which is good, not getting worse.
Damn.
So those are the big things.
Yeah.
And then it also created this career, which is wild.
Yeah.
So
in a way, you're still teaching, but I know a lot of people, especially educators, they kind of identify their life as a teacher. And so was it ever, like, did you ever feel guilty leaving, or did you struggle with your identity when you did make the switch?
Definitely guilty. And I'd left different teaching positions and roles over the years, and almost this like equal guilt. There's such a stigma kind of like, if you're a teacher, you better stay there and stay committed forever and don't abandon anybody. At first, kids, and then as a principal, like, I love the people I work with and I love supporting them, and it felt like an abandonment. And so that was one of the scariest things I've ever did was tell my final school that I was quitting, but also quitting the whole career. Because I didn't leave because I didn't like teachers or kids. It was a lot of other stuff. And for sure, like, that teacher part of me, it's fulfilled because I'm teaching these cooking classes, educating people in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just generally an audience that wants to be there. They're coming to learn everything.
They've
that
chosen helps. To be there.
Yeah. But there's so many skills that I use that I learned as a teacher and then as a leader.
Yeah.
So
what was the conversation like with William when you, and how did you, how long have you been married?
Married in 2003.
Okay.
So 23 years. Yeah.
And how long were you together prior to?
We met as friends in 99. And then a year or so after that.
Yeah.
More than friends.
How did your marriage influence your decision, and what was it like when you talked to him about it?
It completely influenced it. He was so he wanted me, anytime I would have a rough day, like, get out, quit, like, we'll figure it out. So never any ounce of not supporting that.
Yeah.
Probably even more supportive of me leaving before I was ready.
Yeah.
Just because he could see the stress. So without his support, it never would have happened. And his excitement, and like in the beginning, again, it was like a outlet. It wasn't a job, but at our house, we did this out of our home. He was my assistant.
Yeah.
And I look so fondly on that because he's in a very like leadership performative role. And that's like how I know him professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But then in this little like professional pocket in our home, I saw him like take a back seat and like pretty like quietly assist me, which isn't like generally his like vibe, because he's in such a like performative world. So
yeah,
no, it was a special time together. And once in a while, when I'm stuck, he'll help me, and it's like, oh, this is how it all started. Yeah. Kind of thing. So, you know, so supportive.
I remember when he was your sous chef.
Oh, right.
I loved it. I also loved seeing William in the little assistant role.
A whole different role, right? I know.
It was awesome, and he was so good at it, and it was great.
That's
it was
also
beautiful.
How I know him. I mean, we all know our partners in different ways than the world does, so
yeah.
It was kind of like a cool peek into home William for others.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I didn't even tell any friends or family we were doing this. Like, it was all through like vegan Facebook groups because I wanted to test the waters. I knew obviously people I knew would come. Mm-hmm. So it was all strangers, which is a whole kind of like looking back, like what a leap of like
strangers into your home.
Right. I don't know. Something just came over me during that period where I just, it's almost like it wasn't me. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't not a trained cook. I don't know how the heck I was like, I'll do a 12-course Thanksgiving meal as the first cooking class I ever teach. Like, it's insanity.
Yeah.
But it worked.
But you're so good at curating a feeling and a space. Like, even with your house, I feel that way. It feels like such a vibe and an energy. And so I think people obviously are paying for your food, but they're also paying for you, your presence, your company, your energy. And I actually loved when it was in your house. Like, when you invite us over for dinner, I'm like, fuck yes. I don't care what we have, we're going.
Thank you.
So before, when you were in the school setting and with William's job, you guys had opposite schedules. Do you have a similar schedule now where you can spend more time together during the day?
A lot more overlap. And yeah. So sometimes our time together is midday because mm-hmm. I'll prep in the morning, come home, take a break, and then go back to the kitchen. But yeah, it was truly like prior to this, like as soon as I got home, he went to work.
Yeah.
And then I would go to bed because I was so tired from the school day. So yeah, a lot more time together that overlaps.
I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but you guys actually gave us the idea for, you had a book that you would leave out and like write to each other.
Do you do that?
We do it now. Yeah, we saw it on your counter. And I mean, we did it way more often when we had opposite schedules, very similar. If one of us was in a show or something and it was like, you know, she'd be asleep by the time I'd get home or I'd leave by the time she woke, whatever it might have been. But we, you know, took a page out of your book, no pun intended, where because you were on such opposite schedules, you would leave each other notes kind of like as you come and go.
I recommend it.
It was.
And it's funny you brought that up because it came out in December, because certain months of the year we're back to like we never see each other.
Yeah.
And we're like, it's time for the journal. So it's on our table now. And like as we get busy again. Yeah.
I love it. It's some, there's it's something.
Like, then you have it too. What a like cool thing to stumble upon and read old ones.
Yes. Like all the dates and all the times. Yep. And especially because you've been together for so long.
I like that you're doing it too.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the tip. Okay. So, I already asked you that. Gosh, I've just been jumping all around. Okay. So, your transition wasn't about burnout. It was about curiosity and growth. What would you say to someone who feels that pull for something more but doesn't feel like they might be unhappy enough to leave?
I'm stuck on the first part a little bit because it was a lot about burnout.
Right. You said it was burnout. I don't know where I got that from.
But we mentioned that you listened to some old podcasts that I did. And it's interesting because I was still in a place of being scared to admit that I left a career, like that I was like tiptoeing around, like everything was fine, but this just kind of happened and it's fine. Like that's not,
there was definite burnout. So you were still being careful about how
I was, especially a podcast very early on. But no, so I just want to be like more and more authentic that I was burnt out, and it's a really tough career, as you know, like education. So I feel that for people.
Yeah.
And I feel like, to answer the question, sorry, I jumped around there.
No, it's okay.
I mean, what I found that, like, I knew, I guess I didn't get something in the back of my head was like, there's something else. There's something, I can't figure out what it is. And I would kind of tip my toes into, like, I applied for a couple completely random, weird jobs while I was teaching. That once I was, like, getting deeper into that process, like, this doesn't feel, I didn't want to leave to like be in something else that wasn't fully what I wanted to do. I just knew that. Like people were like, also like try a different school district, try a different school. I was like, I think it's the thing. It's not the place. It's not the people. Like I just feel like it's different. So my true like tiptoeing into this, like something was like teach cooking classes. It felt good. I felt like after the first one, just such a high. And like, I want to do that again. And like, that was in 2018, so that was like 8 years ago, and I still, every one I go into each evening, like, I'm equally as excited, and it ends and I'm equally as on a high. So like, that's
nice.
But back to the beginning, like, it was a slow process. Like, yeah, I was doing like one a month at the beginning,
and, right,
and then kind of like listening to the signs or seeing the signs. Like, then I was asked to, like, would you do a pop-up at a Malaysian restaurant that friends of ours owned? And I just kept saying yes to everything that was connected to this vegan cooking world. And then when I started having to say no because the other career was in the way of saying yes, I was like, I got to decide. Mm. And that's where, that was the step.
Yeah.
The big step.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I ask is because I think sometimes people wait to leave a career or to make a decision on anything in their life because they think that they'll have a moment where they just know. And I was just curious if, like, that's true for you, or if it was more about just, like, deciding to take the risk. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I think there was, I know there was a couple incidents that happened in my school career that last year that it was almost like three strikes, like the, like, really hurtful things and really tough things. Mm. Like, almost like messages like, you shouldn't be doing this anymore, like, because this is what's happening, you're giving your all, and then things are happening, just a whole, not to get into the details, but and kind of like the final one was like coming home and being so upset and talking to boy, like, this is it, that this is it, like, mm-hmm, I can't. It's the emotional part, the heart part, the, it was an unsupportive thing going on in different areas of that past career, and mm-hmm, and knowing, like, I just don't, health and mental wise, think I can push through. It would have been like 18 more years,
right?
To it's not worth the security and the retirement and all that stuff that would have been there. Like, I feel like I might not make it as a person,
right?
Or at least not be happy or have any other energy to do anything else. That was a big part of it. So, but there were some things that happened, work related, that sealed the deal in a way.
I got it.
And then some good opportunities. Like, if I don't leave, I can't say yes to these really cool things that people want me to do.
Right.
So.
Right. If you feel it's holding you, yeah, back. I commend people who can stay. Like, I had a family member who stayed in the same classroom the entire time that she was teaching. Same classroom, same school. And to me, like, I think as a teacher, your whole world revolves around even the school schedule, the school timeline. Mm-hmm. And I remember having moments where I would just think, like, am I going to do this every year for the next,
right,
40 years or whatever it might be? Like, it can feel very daunting. So I feel like it does take a very special type of person to be okay with it. But I also feel like you are such a creative and such an artist that I could see you having those feelings of, like, is this forever? Mm-hmm. Because it's so monotonous at times.
And you've been doing it since you were 4 years old. Like, it just continued forever.
Yeah.
And which, yes, is also really weird when you step away, because you're like, what the hell? Like, no one's telling me what to do or where to go.
I can go to the bathroom.
Right.
So whenever I want.
And, like, you're like, I think you're, like, physically and chemically in tune with this, like, school year schedule. So
yes,
that was really weird.
Do, like, you ever have dreams about your building?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
All the time?
And everything. First day of school, like, back to teach, like, all kinds. I actually had a really positive back to teaching dream.
Did
last
you?
Week, which was like, oh, cool. But it's not usually, they're not usually positive dreams.
Yeah, you've told me some pretty wild dreams. Yeah. I don't know if they're. One was just like, you were driving a school bus, but you were, like, driving it through cars or something?
Through a building car. Yeah, I can't remember the details. It wasn't a positive,
yeah,
like, reflection.
I think my mom has had a school bus dream.
Yeah.
Very similarly. And she's a retired principal.
I guess
principal.
Feeling, like, out of control. Not hard to interpret, I guess.
I mean, you're constantly caring about the safety of kids as a teacher and an administrator. But as an administrator, as a principal, people are like, you're where, what do people say? Where the bill ends? Where the buck, bill, where the buck stops.
What's that mean?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
A deer?
Yeah, maybe it's a buck. Okay, but
you're right.
It's you who people are looking to. So I just imagine the amount of stress that you were under.
And it feels like understandably, when you're coming to your principal, you're not usually coming with like, I have some great news to tell you. Like it's like a 95% negative.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
As far as like, yeah, the emails and the people, like, because you're there to help solve problems, which I loved, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And I love parts of it, but yeah, overall. And also, it just kind of like popped in my mind back to like, when do you like take the leap? Also, mm-hmm. like giving yourself, like, I journal a lot, so I journal every day. So a lot of this went into my journaling, like, mm. where I'm at now and where I want to be. And I don't, and I'm not like a goal setter either, but just like generally where I want to be. But I also remember mornings before school, that's when I journal, like, I can't do this anymore. What am I going to do? I can't. But then also stopping and being like, you're not going to fix this today. Mm. So just go to school and do your best and you're going to figure it out. So telling yourself, you don't have to figure it out. There's no timeline to figure it out. But at the same time, like you said, there's also no clear, no one's going to tell you this is the exact right time. Any big decision, whether it's positive or negative, there's no perfect time.
I know.
Which sucks.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just want someone to tell me. Mm-hmm. I think that's why people go to psychics.
It's true.
Did you ever go to a psychic?
I didn't. I haven't. Have you?
No. I had like, I went to like a tarot card reader on the boardwalk. I don't think that counts, but it was amazing.
Yeah.
When you were first teaching, so it would have been like the early 2000s you started?
98.
Oh, wow. Did you feel comfortable being open about your sexuality?
No. Oh, my gosh. No.
No?
No. I was totally closeted.
Okay. You mean at school specifically?
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yep.
I did know this about you. I'm sorry. I'm like pretending like I don't know, but I don't remember.
Your listeners don't know this.
They don't know. Well, I also don't. I want you to feel comfortable. I don't want to.
I'm totally comfortable. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because were you married? Or you were
I was going to be married to a woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I was engaged.
What year was that?
I'm so bad with years. I got engaged in 96, so 2 years into college.
Okay, wow.
And then, but broke it off my senior year halfway through.
Okay.
But not for transparent reasons.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't ready. That was what the story was.
Okay.
Because I had met someone my senior year.
A man?
A man, yeah. And
what college
was like,
this
is Penn State.
Maine?
Very closeted campus as well. Not closet, but not super gay.
Well, this was the 90s.
Yeah. Although I was just there and it's really gay.
Well,
I feel like everyone was either gay or a jock. That's it now, which was pretty great.
Nice.
I mean, that's a super weird, but I was like, every other person is non-binary or seems gay or a jock, but they seem like nicer jocks. So
yeah.
Go State. We are Penn State.
We are. I feel like people don't, especially a lot of straight people don't understand how different it was in the 90s and even the early 2000s. I want to say, mm-hmm. and even just talking to people, they kind of assume like, well, like, it, you know, we came so far and there was representation, and it's like, not really,
yeah.
not really. So when you first started teaching and people would ask you about, you know, because so many teachers do like the, here's a big poster about me and there's mm-hmm. pictures on your desk and it's like that first day of school, this is my wife, this is my husband.
Yes.
So how did you navigate that?
My gosh, that's giving me like legit anxiety.
I'm
happy. I want to talk about it
because yeah.
I still pretty frequently I'm like, I can't believe I'm completely comfortable and happy and out. Like I never ever thought it was going to happen.
Oh.
in those days. Yeah, just that constant, like, every day, like, what'd you do this weekend? And I went here with some people. Like, you just give the most vague. Mm-hmm. So you're like, no one's getting to know you. So that's not great because you don't want to share too much. Mm-hmm. And yeah, all that, like, exactly, like, all about me posters and pictures. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if I shared, like, maybe I would say, like, I used to be engaged. It didn't work out. But I was constantly people trying to set me up.
Yep.
With their daughters or other teachers or and just like, I'm not ready. I'm okay. I don't, just the most. Yeah. And like then avoiding the lunch, like avoiding anywhere where it was going to be social.
Mm-hmm.
But then parents, I mean, just it's such a cultural thing to be understandable, I guess, but nosy and like ask questions that are not fair to ask, really.
Yeah. And then with kids, like I always felt, sometimes I even felt weird. Even when I was out to like my co-teachers and my family, sometimes even with kids, I would feel, you know, you don't know where their parents stand mm-hmm. or what they think. And kids don't hold anything back. Right. So sometimes it's like even scarier to come out to kids.
I know. It's true.
So I imagine, do you remember the first time that you were open about it at school?
I was when we moved here. My first 3 years I was in Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg.
Okay.
I was 0% out. And then in New York for a few years, very easy mm-hmm. in New York. And then back here, I mean, we're here in Allentown. And I was out to my coworkers pretty quickly.
Okay.
I really don't feel like I was out till the last three, like with kids, till the last 3 years at Muhlenberg.
Yeah.
Because some of the kids at Muhlenberg were involved in the theater.
So they knew.
So it was just this natural. And some mothers were great. I think it was very intentional. Like, I know your husband. Like, I think they like rolled out that carpet for me to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But I remember the All About Me poster,
mm-hmm.
like 8 years into living in Allentown. And I put up a picture of William and me with my family Aww. On the beach, but I didn't feel Specify. Ready to put up. Just he and I, and the teachers knew, but yeah, it was more like the kids and the parents mm-hmm. And internal, you know what I mean? It's just I think you're right. People not realizing that this isn't, it's not like 100 years ago that people were uncomfortable. It was very recent and it's people are still uncomfortable.
Yes.
I know people that are not out at, in all different careers for different reasons and
yep.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing about coming out to your family?
No. Wild. I was with the person I met in college
mm-hmm.
as roommates to everyone else. And things went very south.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like a dangerous situation. And I lived near where my parents did at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to their house in the middle of the night. Mm. And I had, feel like I had no choice.
Oh, man.
And I...
You told them.
Not just coming out, but also this is what's going on. And just, I mean, all of it. So
yeah.
The most, like, kind of backed into a corner. Because the person I was with told me he would be outing me the next day.
Oh, my God.
Which he did. So I had to go quickly tell people.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was really, really...
How were they?
They were... in shock.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, like, how did people not ever think I was gay?
Yeah.
But I grew up somewhere where, like, there was one gay teacher who was, like, so flamboyant, and that's what gay was to everyone, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there just wasn't, like, a baseline gay person. Plus, we grew up in a church where it wasn't, like, hyper crazy anti-gay, but between the lines, I think it was understood that you know, so I just don't, like, Jason goes to church and he's a Christian and he's in the youth group. He can't be, like, anyway. So I think it was a shock. I really do. I don't think they had an idea. And my mom was really, and then I came out in the middle of the night in their bed and then lived with them because I didn't feel safe going back to where
yeah.
I lived. And my dad, we spent, like, every night just, like, talking.
Oh, my
he was
God.
Very, he was kind of instantly curious.
Okay.
My mom was very quiet for quite a while. And then when we started talking it in therapy and things, it was more her feeling so awful that she didn't know I had gone through 23 years of this pain without her being able to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's literally like the PFLAG president of a huge chapter of PFLAG in Pennsylvania and way more gay advocacy than me. It's amazing. Aww. Her and my dad were super big advocates, and he passed away, but she carried on this torch of, I mean, it's just, I can't believe all of the things in my life that have come to be that I never, ever imagined. But yeah, the coming out was really far less than ideal way, but I feel like it had to be that way. I wasn't accepting that I was okay with being gay myself, but I had to, I felt like do it to be safe.
Yeah.
So I wasn't even convinced at that point that, I don't know.
Well, and what a gift that you were able to have that with your dad while he was here, because who knows if more time had passed, if you would have, and the fact that he was instantly curious is so cool, because maybe that was how he could show you that he accepted it.
It was really, yeah. I can picture those nights of just talking, and then I'm sure he was then talking to my mom, and that, you know, helped the whole family kind of come together. And I remember, I feel like one of the key things I shared, which is so simple, was like any dream I ever have at night is about other men or was about boys when I was younger. Like, I didn't choose that or try that. It just happens.
Yeah. When people ask, like, how do you know? Like, what do you mean? Right. I just do. Right. How do you know?
Yeah. And then something that I felt his response was, that makes me so sad. As I said, like, the first 3 years in college, I like didn't make eye contact with any males because I was afraid that something could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, that's so sad that you didn't. I mean, I made friends that were males, but like anywhere, I don't know. So
I know what you mean.
I remember these key moments of like he had like, oh, I get that, or I feel bad if that happened. And
So he was really just curious about your experience specifically, which is so, I mean, there's so many people out there that would kill to have that with their parents.
Yeah, so lucky. And they loved my I loved my fiance. Like, she was part of our family.
Yeah.
And I do feel like the coming out like answered this big question. Like, 2 years ago, why did you end this long relationship and like a seemingly perfect like wedding to be? So it's like, well, here's the answer.
So you ended up telling her.
I did tell her a couple years later.
How did she take it?
I had written a letter and I never heard back. And then I actually, once we moved here from school, called her at work just to say, I want to make sure you got the letter. And she got married a year after we broke up.
Oh, wow.
And she said, I can't believe you called me at work. And I was like, would you want me to call you at home? Like, right. I wasn't being a dick, but I was like, I just need to like, you can feel how you want, but I just want to make sure you read this letter so that there's an answer out there for you. And she said she did. And she said, I feel sad for what you must have been going through.
Aww.
So it was a good, like, moment. I guess it was closure. I had kind of, you know, selfishly hoped that we could, like, then rebuild, like, a friendship, because I felt like we'd been best friends. That's what that was.
Mm-hmm.
For many, many years, and I missed that, but I understand that.
Right.
I hurt her more than anyone probably has in her life at the same time, so.
Do you ever look her up on the interwebs? You don't have to answer.
I do, and she's very not public.
Oh.
Yeah. We've seen each, she came to my dad's funeral.
That's nice.
And I went to her dad's funeral.
That's nice.
We had moments there, but no, I wish her that I love her. I mean, I truly, like, we were together as friends and then boyfriend girl, all of that, like sixth grade through sophomore in college.
Wow.
Like, we were close, too close people. So,
aww. Yeah. It's always so hard for me to imagine that someone who's with someone who's closeted doesn't have a feeling deep down.
It's so, I know, so complicated. And I do think, again, the culture grew up where I did, obviously. And like, a gay person wasn't what I was. Like, there's so many other things on that belief system list of what a gay person is. So even if I looked or acted gay sometimes or whatever, I also wasn't all these other awful things that people define as someone who's gay, at least back then. So
yeah.
So it's a no, but I do think that, like, how did, I don't know.
Yeah. I think that all the time about me. I'm sure if you could go back to, like, I think this way all the time. If your little kid self was, you know, sitting there and you could go back and say, hey, you know, it's 2026. You own your own business. You live with your husband. You have the world's cutest fucking dog. And like, this is your life. This is your house. Wouldn't that just like blow that little kid's mind?
100%. Yeah, completely. It was not a reality, any of it.
Yeah.
Like, even a possibility.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Thank you for sharing all of that.
You're very welcome.
I know it's sensitive and I try and be mindful, but I appreciate you being open.
Thanks for asking about it.
What would you say if there was someone listening now that is scared to come out? What would you tell them?
I think it's hard to say it's all going to be okay because you don't know what support system a person has, but I feel like the advantage of the years that have gone by since I came out is it is easy to tap into systems that, or support systems that you might not even know the people, but you can reach out through groups or online or, you know, different things to meet people, to meet people that have happy, successful out lives. And to, why am I so stumped on this?
No, because it's hard. Yeah, it's a hard question.
I know. Because we talked about my conscious decision to like change careers, but my coming out and all that was so long and not conscious.
Right,
like
how it was kind of forced.
Yeah. I feel like I would hope anyone that needs to come out can find a friend. I mean, if you can find one person, just the very first person you tell, because I had come out to people before my parents, like there were certain people that knew a little bit. And that relief of just having one person, because the first person that knows is 100% more people than knew before you told them. And then you tell another person or get involved in I don't know, the cliche places where gay people are, theater or arts or sports. I don't know. I don't want to be whatever.
The hockey rink.
There you go. Exactly. We've all learned that in the last year.
Hell yeah.
Try to find a little tiny place where you can be you and just be you in that place first.
Yeah.
Until you feel ready to tell another little tiny place and then build up to.
And find a tiny place.
And also, there's people that absolutely did not. Everyone wasn't like my parents. I lost friends. I lost major mentors in my life who I am like, I lived and died for these people and they could not get past that I was gay, and that hurt me deeply and it saddens me, but you grow and learn that. William, when I first met him, was like, what other people think about me is not my
business.
Yeah. And that quote really helped, and you can't change how people, if you're you, and you, and even if like some of the people that cut me out, like I didn't do anything to them. I decided to be who I just share who I've always been. And if they can't accept me, why do I want them in my life?
Like, yeah.
So, yeah. No, being prepared for both things to happen.
Right. But knowing that at the end of the day, you're being more true to yourself, which is always a win.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I recognize that I'm very privileged and lucky that my parents are both so accepting pretty quickly. And that doesn't happen for everyone. And I can't imagine what that feels like. So yeah. I do understand that.
How long did you live with them after that?
Couple months.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got my own place, but a couple months.
I loved living with my parents in my 20s.
Did you?
Those were the days. Having a full-time job, but still living in your parents' house. It was a great time.
I think it was I think with all the things that were going on, it was wild, but it was a safe, hopefully your home is a safe place. So yeah, I moved into their basement, even though clearly my bedroom was there.
Oh, okay.
But I had a dog and I don't know. I don't actually know why, but I decided to live in the basement. So
I like
comfortably,
that.
But yeah.
As someone who's had a long marriage, do you feel like, how can I word this? Because I didn't write this down. I'm going so off track here. But sometimes, like when you, anytime you're in the media and people are talking about like couples therapy or problems or arguments that couples have or whatever it might be, like it always seems to be geared towards hetero couples. Do you feel like you've ever found resources or like as you've been moving through a long, stable marriage, what have been some of the tools and what would you tell people who are in the queer community that are like, I want that long lasting marriage? Where did you find the tools? My questions are hard.
Yeah, No, I like it. You're making me think. Think about things that I didn't consciously think about. I know, because you're right. There's not, and like we said before, even a couple years ago, there wasn't, even like on TV and movies, like generally like healthy, stable marriage relationship models. I feel like I learned a lot from my own parents. Mm. I feel like William and I, like, it's an adventure. Like, we both from the beginning were like trying to find our way career-wise, location-wise. Like, it's and some weeks I need more support, some weeks he needs more support, and like kind of like taking turns in that way, like who needs the support now, and then sometimes we both need support. But I feel like overall it's been this not conscious, you know, not signing up for support in our own marriage, but like you just know.
Yeah.
And like I just heard this other podcast thing, like the importance of screaming and yelling and fighting, and like that's never been ever been part of like what our relationship is.
You don't scream at each other.
No, and yeah, that was never modeled to me, so like I didn't grow up with that. And mm-hmm. I mean, we wouldn't be together if that's how we dealt with things. I mean, that's not, I can't have that in my life. So like talking through things, letting things go that aren't important, like knowing when like certain things don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that like ebb and flow of who needs more support, and that can just be like doing things to help the other person take things off their list.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also be like, I know you're dealing with this, so like I'm not gonna even ask you about it. Like we know each other so well, like just sometimes you just need silence. Sometimes you do want to talk about it, sometimes you want to talk about it but you don't want advice, and like we're good at that. Like I'm telling you this, but don't tell me what I should do or what you think. I just want to tell you.
Yeah.
And like that's how honest we can be, which is good.
I love that. I feel like we really got into some heavy topics, so I want to end on a nice light note.
Okay.
Do you want to share with people how you feel about colonial ties?
I was most prepared for this question.
Because you have responded on my Instagram saying, please talk about colonial sex. Why do you have such a hatred towards the colonial era?
So I'm not having a hatred towards the people.
Of course.
I'm more having a hatred towards the reenactment of certain time periods in tourist settings.
Like Williamsburg, Virginia.
Yes.
Colonial Williamsburg.
And Plymouth Plantation. I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about physical people in like dirty cotton shirts, like doing like a butter churn. And like, you're like, where's the bathroom? They're like, oh, we don't in these times have a bot, like not breaking care. I don't like a situation. That was a really good.
Hob about to I don't, the left.
Oh, right. I don't like. If I'm seeing a performance, I like to just watch. I don't want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And those places, same thing. And I'm going to, if anyone loves these places, that's wonderful. Like Disney Renaissance Fair. I'm just going to offend everyone that likes anything.
Let it
like,
out. Let
I
it
don't want to go somewhere and interact with someone who's playing a part.
You don't want to be immersed.
It's my problem. It's not their thing. Like, this is my own problem.
I'm not mad about it.
Yeah.
I
don't want to be immersed. No.
You don't want to be immersed. Specifically, though, you seem to really fixate on the smells and the clothes.
It's true.
Right?
Yeah.
The dirtiness.
The smells of clothes, the sweat, the repetitive, like banging like a blacksmith hammer, banging or churning a butter. Like,
the butter
I don't
churning
like
is
a
really
repetitive, like colonial task.
Okay.
And also, like, I don't like going to the theater and like people are coming in the and like coming and being like a pre-show.
Mm.
Like if you come up to me and ask me some question, I'm just gonna stare at you, even if I know you and love you. I shut down.
Yeah.
I freaked out at a Red Robin once because this Red Robin mascot kept coming up and trying to give me gummy worms, and yeah. I was like, please stop. And then I like legit was like yelled.
Oh my god.
So yeah, there's a trigger that happens.
Do you think you were like, do you believe in like past life reincarnation?
It could be. Like, I do.
Maybe.
But
you
I believe
were
in that I've literally went to Plymouth Plantation and I didn't like
the butter churning
right.
task.
I even have a relative who's a pilgrim descendant, so I am not trashing.
Aren't we all like somewhat true, pilgrim probably. Descendants?
That's a good point.
In a way.
Maybe. Yeah. And this isn't about any of these people.
No.
And I love, like, I appreciate people that want to be in a costume. I'm not talking about customers. I'm talking about
the actual yeah. act. What do you do? I know it's a different time, but I feel like it's very similar. What do you do during a Christmas Carol every year? Like, I feel like those costumes are kind of giving colonial.
They're clean. They're
you cleaner. Know they're clean.
Yeah. Hmm. Actually, they probably do. It's hot on stage. I smell on stage.
Yeah.
They're not churning. They're not doing any of that.
Yeah. So it's specifically to the colonial tasks.
Colonials, medievals.
Yeah. The Renaissance Fair.
I worked at F.A.O. Schwartz in New York.
What?
I did. I was a toy soldier.
Shut
so
up.
I was part of this scene and we couldn't break character. So
oh my
God. I'd want to put that out there. Like I get it, but there's a locker room. There was a locker room in there where you all got dressed. So I would get dressed with like Cinderella, like all the people that worked in the toy store.
Cool.
It wasn't because like I would ask Barbie like what time it is, and she would like
she would be in character.
Yeah. What's time?
Why
like that kind of stuff like in the locker room, and that just was like, come on.
Why? Why would they be?
It was commitment. So, like, a really good actor probably would be offended. I mean, that's
no.
bad me saying this, right? You're not on. You're not. She wasn't in the Barbie.
I mean, you're in the locker
playhouse.
Room, right?
Just asking you what time it
Imagine,
was.
Imagine like Kathleen coming home from rehearsal and like speaking like Mrs. Wilkinson.
Yeah,
I actually would have loved that. Okay, I take it back.
Right. But you know, I don't know. So yeah. It's a through line.
Okay. Well, if anyone, you know, happens to see Jason in the coming weeks, don't bring up butter churning or colonial tasks. Thank you so much for doing this for me.
Thank you.
And for coming on and letting me like really dive deep into your personal space.
It's fun.
But I think anyone listening who's been through what you've been through, it will bring them a lot of comfort and insight. So that's what it's all about. Yeah,
thank you. I hope so. Thanks for the opportunity. I love what you do and honored to be here. Shocked to be here when
well,
you ask me.
Shut up.
I was.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
And James was really excited that you were here too. Really, he was on his back. He was loving life. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.